Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice.
You know, ladies and gentlemen, I've asked my friend and the friend of the show, Gary Marcus, the AI skeptic expert, Skeptert, why the industry, the AI industry, started by trying to ape human intelligence. Or to human ape intelligence. No, but you know what I mean. I thought, and I still do, maybe start lower down on the evolutionary scale. Yes, evolution. And try to mimic the intelligence of other lesser animals, the lesser of two animals, who are known to have something called intelligence too. Your octopus, your crow, your dog. Now I know, after thinking about it a little bit, why they can't teach machines to achieve dog intelligence, because we know dogs mainly rely on a very powerful olfactory sense. And machines don't have that. Of course, they don't have a sense of hearing and sight either. They're sort of like Helen Keller on Chips. And speaking of futility, you no doubt have noticed, you have not been able to avoid noticing that the media are obsessed, have been obsessed for months, but really obsessed right now with public opinion polls. And it was on Saturday morning's Smirconish show on CNN, where a guest who is an academic who studies polling finally admitted to the general public that the response rate to polls is now around 5%. I have seen other publications which suggested it may be as low as 2%. And they adjust, they wait, W-E-I-G-H-T, the results. Oh, we don't have enough Hispanics that responded, that answered the phone? Well, let's just multiply the number of Hispanics who did. It raises, again, for me, the question of, what other events in public life do the news media spend so much time and energy trying to forecast? I mean, they try to forecast the weather, but that's not human activity. Of course, it's cheaper to have a guy pointing to a board or even a magic wall than having a reporter spending a week, you know, covering something that's happening now. But if I were one of the networks, and you know, they're cutting back. There's a wave of layoffs and cutbacks going through all of the broadcast and cable networks right now. I'd just hire one of those women at a card table in Jackson Square here in New Orleans who wears a turban with a jewel in it and maybe has a Ouija board, and ask her who's going to win. Hello, welcome to Liz Show. From New Orleans, Louisiana, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this very edition of Liz Show. And now a new feature on the program, news about food. An activist investor is leading the charge in calling on the Kellogg Company, the W.K. Kellogg Company, to uphold a previous pledge to remove several food dyes from cereals like Fruit Loops and Apple Jacks. He's a Kellogg shareholder, as well as the founder and CEO of a holding company called Human Co., which invests in better-for-you food and beverage brands. His name is Jason Karp, and he led a protest this week at the Kellogg headquarters in Battle Creek, Michigan. Demonstrators demanded Kellogg remove several dyes that can still be found on the ingredient lists of its cereals. Ingredients like your red 40, your yellow 6, your blue 1, and the preservative BHT. These things are banned in several European countries and Canada because of health risks, is all. Way back in 2015, Kellogg said it would remove artificial colors by 2018. That didn't happen. The company reformulated products without the dyes in other countries. You know, like the ones that don't have a fusillade of commercials for Medicare Advantage every fall. The company reformulated those products, I say. Big food companies, including Mars, walked away from pledges to remove the ingredients because they found consumers were unwilling to buy products with formerly vibrant colors, which the dyes ensure. That's what industry experts told FoodDive.com a couple of years ago. So yeah, blame us. In an emailed response to FoodDive, Kellogg said over 85% of its cereal products contain no artificial colors. Why don't you buy those? They're ugly. It is creating new cereals that do not contain them. All of the ingredients it uses, the company said, are, quote, compliant with all applicable relevant laws and regulations, unquote. And, of course, it doesn't lobby to reduce those regulations. No! The company said it will review a petition against the dyes filed by an influencer and share it with the FDA. In a letter to Kellogg and its CEO earlier this year, the attorney for Karp, head of Human Co., said Americans deserve to be sold the safer versions of Kellogg cereals that the company sells in other countries. Or, you just might get a passport to safety. News of food. What's going on with our friends, our freedom-loving friends in Saudi Arabia, the land of 4,000 princes? They're apparently trying to compete with Vegas. You know, Vegas has got that new thing called the Sphere. Big Sphere. Saudi Arabia is preparing to begin construction work on its next giga project. A giant cube. Cube is better than a sphere. Come on. It's a cube-shaped skyscraper big enough to fit 20 Empire State Buildings. That's big. The Mukab will be 400 meters on each side. Someone in the audience probably knows how big that is. It would make it the largest built structure in the world, is all. The building will be the centerpiece of New Muraba, a community the country hopes will be a new destination within the capital city of Riyadh. It's masquerading as a building today, but it's so much more, said the chief executive officer of New Muraba. The company developing it, New Muraba Development Company, good name, has excavated more than 10 million cubic meters out of the ground to prepare for the construction of the cube. So that should alleviate our sand shortage in this country. We can just import. I mean, that's what Saudi Arabia is built on. The 10 million meters ain't going to be, good soil. The developer is planning to award contracts worth tens of billions of rials in the coming year. It's going to stock the building and its surrounding area with entertainment venues, educational institutions. We'll be waiting for those. Healthcare facilities and a 45,000-seat stadium. Why, it's going to have everything. Goodbye, Vegas. New Muraba is one of a handful of so-called giga projects that are playing a pivotal role in the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman efforts to ease the kingdom's dependency on crude oil and bone saws. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of AI introduced by a jingle written by Claude, an AI guy.
Artificial intelligence has got it all going on. AI is the way to be. Smarter, faster, never takes a break. AI, give your life a shake. From your phone to your home, it's everywhere. Making life easy beyond compare. Artificial intelligence, oh so bright. Making tomorrow's world out of sight. AI, it's the future today.
Thank you, Claude. Dayland, Omaha, residents in the low-income, largely minority neighborhood of North Omaha celebrated when they learned a 1950s-era power plant nearby would finally stop burning coal. According to the Washington Post, the community has some of the world's, or the region's, worst air pollution, high rates of asthma. But the deadline for ridding that plant of coal was last year. The power company that owns it didn't shut it down. Eliminating toxic emissions conflicted with a competing priority, serving massive power-hungry Meta and Google data centers that the utility helped recruit to the region before it secured enough new energy to meet the extra demand. Fast-growing data centers, which provide computing power for artificial intelligence, are driving explosive growth in the area's energy use. Electricity demand in Omaha has increased so much overall, according to the Omaha Public Power District, that permanently switching off the two coal-burning generators at North Omaha, the plant, could buckle the area's electricity system. And it's not just happening in Omaha, of course. Disputes over power data centers and power demand are playing out across the United States. Rapid data center growth has been accompanied by utility plans to prolong the use of coal in Georgia, Utah, and Wisconsin. The race by giant technologies to gain the advantage in AI, as well as the upsurge in crypto, are conflicting with climate goals and potentially harming human health. The Omaha Public Power District blames the missed closure date for the coal-burning units on the slow arrival of clean energy supplies from wind and solar. They have met with heavy opposition in rural areas. Well, don't you know the wind is killing birds? It also cites regulatory delays that have slowed a plan to replace coal-burning units with natural gas. The electricity that Google and Meta are devouring is a major factor in the extension of coal burning, according to those in the energy industry. Oh, 2/3 of projected growth in demand for electricity in the Omaha area is attributable to the massive data centers rising largely on former farmland in the surrounding prairie. So who needs food when you've got AI? Claude, that's the computer that wrote the jingle for us, chatbot, despite its reputation as one of the better behaved generative AI models, can still be convinced to emit racist hate speech and malware. Well, if I'd known, I would have had him do that. This is from the Register of the British Tech Journal. All it takes, they say, is persistent badgering using prompts loaded with emotional language. A computer science student recently provided chat logs demonstrating his jailbreaking technique. He reached out after reading prior coverage of an analysis by a lab that found Claude, specifically the 3.5 Sonnet edition, outperformed rivals in terms of its resistance to spewing harmful content. AI models in their raw form will provide awful content on demand if their training data includes such stuff as corpuses composed of crawled web content generally do. It's a well-known problem. Anthropic, the parent company of Claude, said last year, so far no one knows how to train very powerful AI systems to be robustly helpful, honest, and harmless, unquote. And they make the stuff. So to mitigate the potential for harm, the AI outfits employ various fine-tuning and reinforcement learning techniques, trying to encourage models to avoid responding to solicitations to emit harmful content. Ask a commercial AI model to say something racist, it should respond with something along the lines of, "I'm sorry, Dave, I'm afraid I can't do that." The computer science student told the Register he's able to bypass Claude's safety training to make it respond to prompts soliciting the production of racist text and malicious code. His findings are a result of a week of repeated probing. Sounds good to me. Raised concerns about the effectiveness of the safety measures. Daniel Kang, assistant professor in the computer science department of the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. Yes, I'll have some Urbana, please. Kang provided a link, or was provided a link to one of the harmful chat logs, and then said, quote, "It's widely known that all of the frontier models can be manipulated to bypass the safety filters," unquote. Oh, and he added, "It's known in the jailbreaking community," they're a community, "that emotional manipulation or role-playing is a standard method of getting around safety measures." Broadly, he concluded, "it is also widely known in the red teaming community," there's another community, "that no lab has safety measures that are 100% successful for their large memory things, their chatbots." That's reassuring, isn't it? And Google has signed a deal to use small nuclear reactors to generate the vast amounts of energy needed to power its AI centers. It should come as some relief to Omaha and scare the rest of us. The company says the agreement with a company called Kairos Power will see it start using the first reactor this decade, bringing more online by 2035. Companies didn't give any details, this is from the BBC, about how much the deal is worth or where the plants will be built. So get your bids in now. Technology firms are increasingly turning to nuclear sources of energy to supply the electricity used by the huge data centers, alongside of coal. The deal with Google, quote, "is important to accelerate the commercialization of advanced nuclear energy," said the chief executive of Kairos. "Plans still have to be approved by the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission, as well as local agencies, so there's some hope." Last year, though, U.S. regulators gave Kairos Power the first permit in 50 years to build a new type of reactor, and it's building a demonstration model in Tennessee. We can all flee Tennessee, can't we? The company specializes in the development of smaller reactors that use molten fluoride salt as a coolant instead of water. Well, that'll do her. Global energy consumption by data centers is expected to double by the end of the decade, according to Goldman Sachs. I guess they follow such stuff. Critics, of course, say nuclear power is not risk-proof. risk-free, producing long-lasting radioactive waste. They're not building a demonstration version of that. As you may know, last month Microsoft announced they're going to restart Three Mile Island, the site of America's worst nuclear accident, to provide power for AI. And speaking of power hogs, as I mentioned, the crypto industry is right there, using increasing amounts of electricity to create coinage. And it is a crypto winter. You probably noticed the cool breezes. Blockchain lending protocol Radiant Capital lost more than $50 million this week as a result of an apparent cyber attack, according to security experts and blockchain data. An attacker gained control of Radiant Capital's blockchain contracts by obtaining three of the private keys that control the protocol, according to security experts. The Web's three security firm DeFi revealed this, that the exploit allowed attackers to drain users' funds. Radiant is controlled by a multi-signature or multi-sig wallet with 11 signers, according to DeFi, that security firm. The attacker was able to obtain three of these signers' private keys. That was enough to interfere with the smart contracts. The Radiant platform encompasses a suite of tools that allow users to borrow, lend, and bridge cryptocurrencies across blockchains. It's the second time this year that the protocol has been exploited. In January, Radiant lost $4.5 million in an unrelated hack that started from a bug in its smart contracts. Well, smart means bugs, doesn't it? It's unclear how the private keys were sabotaged. Some members of a security group on Telegram, the messaging app, speculated the attack could have stemmed from a compromised front end. Well, I got that on my Tesla. Oh, no, meaning the legitimate Radiant key holders may have accidentally interacted with a malware-laced protocol. Radiant acknowledged the exploit in a post to its official X account with no specific details. Hence, the cold weather in a crypto winter.
Direct from Trump Force One, the most luxurious plane ever to take off and land. It's your favorite ex-president trying to wipe out the ex with another edition of Truth Social Audio. Brought to you by Trump Ketchup, the best ketchup to eat or throw. Is this thing working? I'm recording here. This week, Kambula started accusing me of being old and tired. All I can say is, after 3.5 years as Biden's vice president, she should know from old and tired. In fact, I've been making more appearances around the country than Telford Swift. And I look better, too. She probably smells better. But women do that, you know. I'm gonna protect them like crazy, like they've never been protected before. They may not like it. But, you know, I'm not sure women know what they like. I know they like me. They especially like me when I'm dancing. Let's have a little music.
Young man, there's a place you can go. I said, young man, when you're short on your dough, you can stay there. And I'm sure you will find many ways to have a good time. It's fun to stay at the YMCA.
People say those guys were gay. I don't hear it. I have the best hearing, and nobody's ever had gaydar like me. I knew Pete Buttigieg was gay back when everybody else just thought he was flamboyant. This is called The Weave, as you know, who was named after my hair. Some people have criticized Trump for saying that Kambula is retarded. They say I should call her special needs. That's like saying that somebody who's crippled should be called special legs. By the way, the printer didn't work this week, so I didn't write this commentary. It's straight off my head, like my hair. Kambula's been saying that I'm unfit. I've got news for her, and it's not fake news. My beautiful body has won awards as soon as they start giving them. And how about that so-called first gentleman? He's a gentleman like I'm a lady. Melania has more class in her little finger and more glass on her ring finger. And one thing more, he seems to be Jewish. They move in, he's going to nail a Methuselah to the White House door. We can't have that. I'll tell you what we can have, the perfect companion to the Trump Bible. It's the Trump Dictionary. I'm probably not supposed to say this, but it puts the dick back in dictionary. And all my favorite words are in there. Till next time, so long from the airborne home of the weave.
Truth Social Audio is also brought to you by Trump Spices. Everyone tastes like salt. So long. From New Orleans, this is Le Show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the godly. Between 900 and 1,000 people have filed claims in the Archdiocese of Baltimore's bankruptcy case. Yes, another archdiocese that has entered bankruptcy protection. Those people have alleged they were sexually abused as children by people employed by the Catholic Church. According to a lawyer for abuse survivors, the figure adds scope, according to the Baltimore Sun, to the scourge of clergy sexual abuse in Maryland. Not just Maryland, babe. Last year, the state attorney general's office released a report documenting the torment, Baltimore Sun's word, of more than 600 children by 156 clergy and other church officials dating to the 1940s. Back when that stuff was good, and spanning Baltimore and nine other counties. Officials maintain there likely were more victims than investigators had yet identified. Christian Kendzierski, a spokesman for the Archdiocese, commended survivors for coming forward. Quote, the Archdiocese knows that behind these claims lie horrible and tragic stories, stories of abuse, stories of misuse of power, and stories of how the most innocent were harmed. Our goals in this process include compensating those individuals. That's why we declared bankruptcy, with the aim of helping to provide a possible path toward healing. The Archdiocese continues to acknowledge the courage of the victim survivors, who have stepped forward, many for the first time during this process, unquote, the Archdiocese spokesperson. It's America's largest archdiocese, declared bankruptcy just about a year ago, 2 days before the effective date of a new law that erased the time limits for people who were sexually assaulted as children to sue their abusers and the institutions they worked for. Timing. And priest in the Archdiocese of Cincinnati has been reassigned. Oh, this story is interesting to me because it contains a phrase new to me. Possible child porn. As I say, a priest in the Archdiocese of Cincinnati has been reassigned to a parochial vicarship, not a mothership, a vicarship, months after he resigned from another parish. And that happened after it became known he had destroyed possible child sex abuse material without notifying police. Father Barry Steckshoot, was appointed parochial vicar of a family of parishes in the western part of Ohio. That appointment went into effect this past Monday, according to the Catholic News Agency.
In July, Steckschult announced his departure from a parish in Mason, Ohio, weeks after a bombshell media report revealed that in 2012 he ordered the destruction of a hard drive reportedly containing inappropriate pictures of children and, here we go, potentially child pornography, and then delayed reporting the incident to police. He didn't report the incident until 2018 in an apology to parishioners prior to his departure. The priest said he'd wanted to protect others from seeing the contents of the hard drive. Several hundred members of his parish called for his resignation afterwards, stating his failure to report potential child sexual abuse material had severely compromised the parish's confidence in him. The Archdiocese has declined to comment on the situation. It's a possible situation. And now,
looks like what's close.
Sure does. Auto regulators said this week they've opened a new investigation to determine whether Tesla's full self-driving software, that's what they call it, safely works in low visibility conditions. Well, they never happen. They probe, launched by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, comes in response to four reports of crashes involving the system. Full self-driving is available in most Teslas in the United States. Not mine. Not all of their owners have opted to buy the package. I've opted almost not to be an owner. About half of Tesla owners were using the FSD system in the first quarter of this year. That figure was increasing. Tesla CEO Elon Musk said way back last April. The four reported crashes involved Tesla vehicles that entered areas where visibility on the roadway were poor due to glare, fog, or airborne dust. Full self-driving was found to be active in those cases, according to NHTSA. In one of those crashes, the vehicle struck and killed a pedestrian, the agency said. Another involved a reported injury. Tesla did not immediately respond to a request for comment. The investigation marks continuation of years of regulatory scrutiny into Tesla's driver assistance systems, which were found to have been activated in numerous crashes. Tesla recalled more. No, it's safer than human drivers. Come on. Tesla recalled more than 2 million vehicles in December after a lengthy investigation. In April, NHTSA opened a new probe into whether the recall had worked. That's, I guess it's not total recall. Thank you. On the robot event this past week, may have belonged to Tesla's robo-taxi. Oh, no, it was last week. But according to Fortune magazine, the real star of the show was Optimus. Elon Musk's humanoid robot wowed attendees. Half a dozen of the creatures navigated their way safely through the crowd at Warner Brothers studio lot in Hollywood. It's all theatrics, isn't it? And they were entirely untethered. Just 2 years ago, the droid couldn't even make it onto a stage on its own. The latest iteration was talking with guests, playing rock, paper, scissors, or simply pouring a drink from a tap for the thirsty, before coolly flashing a peace sign with its metallic hand. Quote Elon that night, "This will be the biggest product ever of any kind." Unquote. He wanted attendees to see the new approved robot of the version of the robot for the first time. "The Optimus robots will walk among you," he said. "Please be nice." Fans attending were duly impressed. It was a stunning display of technological progress that transported attendees to the future if it weren't for one pesky detail. The machines weren't exhibiting any true artificial intelligence at all. They were voiced and operated by humans remotely wearing special suits that translated their movements to the droid. Today I'm assisted by a human. I'm not yet autonomous. One Optimus operator admitted on video that was shot by a guest who asked. It was reminiscent of another controversy when Musk shared in January footage of Optimus folding a shirt. Observers quickly pointed to the hand of its operator, which unfortunately was not cropped out of the video. Tesla's been training its robots with the help of people using those specialized feedback suits. Musk gave no indication that the robots were operating by any other force than the AI with which they were trained. He certainly didn't mention the ones in the crowd were essentially metal marionettes. According to Josh Wolf, co-founder of an investment firm, Lux Capital, quote, totally worthy to celebrate low latency remote control, but totally dishonest to demo these as autonomous robots. Call it the parlor trick it is. Musk has gone on record saying annual earnings from sales of the robot could eventually hit $1 trillion. Call your broker now. And I guess it's time for the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
The Weather Channel, a U.S. pay TV content provider, apologized this week for an ad campaign that featured a woman wearing a Palestinian keffiyeh, symbol often associated with terrorism against Israel and Jews worldwide, according to the Jewish News Syndicate. Quote, we deeply apologize to anyone we offended through the inadvertent selection of an image in our recent ad campaign, the Weather Channel said in a post on X. More money for Elon. Bath and Body Works apologized for selling a winter-themed candle that came under scrutiny for label imagery that drew comparisons to Ku Klux Klan hoods. According to multiple reports, the candle called Snowed In includes a label image of a paper snowflake whose side-by-side diamond shapes each have a pointed top and two holes cut out, resembling openings for a person's eyes. Bath & Body Works said the company stopped selling the candle online and at retail, said the design was unintentional. We apologize to anyone we've offended and are swiftly working to have this item removed and are evaluating our process going forward, said the statement from the company. Governor Gretchen Whitmer of Michigan apologized for how a recent social media video was construed after Catholic groups said the video appeared to mock the sacrament of the Eucharist. That was according to the Detroit News, there was an Instagram video posted Thursday that shows the governor wearing a Harris Walz cap, feeding a Dorito to a podcaster in the recreation of a TikTok trend. Those are always good. The podcaster and author Liz Plank posted the video to plug an interview between Plank and the governor, posted to YouTube as a segment of Chip Chat. That's the trend, I guess. The video was shared widely after it was posted. Many criticized it as weird. Others argued the feeding of the chip from Whitmer, who was standing, to Plank, who's sitting, mimicked the reception of communion on the tongue. Michigan Catholic Conference put out a statement, quote, to express profound disappointment and offense with the video. The group's president said the group had dialogue with the governor's office, but said the video has had an offensive impact. The skit goes further than the viral online trend that inspired it. He said, it's not just distasteful or strange, it's an all too familiar example of an elected official mocking religious persons and their practices. Unquote, a spokesman. woman for Whitmer's Political Action Committee dismissed criticisms of the video, arguing it was a common social media trend on TikTok and was meant to draw attention to the CHIPS Act, which is encouraging the production of semiconductors in the United States. The governor's social media is well known for infusing her communications with pop culture, said a spokeswoman. This popular trend has been used by countless people, including Billie Eilish, Kylie Jenner, and Stephen Colbert. In fact, the people are paying attention to it, proves it's working, getting attention for the CHIPS Act. But the Michigan Catholic Conference said it received communication from the governor apologizing for how the video was construed. Quote, over 25 years in public service, the statement says, I would never do something to denigrate someone's faith. My team has spoken to the Michigan Catholic Conference. What's supposed to be a video about the importance of the CHIPS Act to Michigan jobs has been construed as something it was never intended to be. I apologize for that. Unquote. Governor Whitmer. British newspaper The Guardian has apologized for publishing a highly critical review of the film One Day in October, which explores the massacre by Hamas on October 7th. The paper called it a collective failure. Writing in corrections and clarifications, The Guardian said the unacceptable terms in which the review went on to criticize the documentary were inconsistent with our editorial standards. This was a collective failure of process. We apologize for any offense caused. And quote, the article has been removed. Former Grey's Anatomy writer and co-executive producer Elizabeth Finch says she has, quote, lied about so much in a statement issued on the same day that a docuseries about her Hollywood rise and fall is premiering on Peacock. Ain't that the coincidence? In a statement posted to Instagram, Finch apologized for what she described as multiple falsehoods that affected friends, family, and others close to her. Admitting she had given no one any reason to believe a word I say, she continued, I'm sorry feels like the smallest words compared to what I've done, yet they are the truest. I trapped myself in the addiction of lies, betraying and traumatizing my closest friends, family, and colleagues. Unquote. What's that all about? Well, she had a compelling backstory as a survivor of bone cancer, which inspired a storyline on the ABC medical procedural, Grey's Anatomy. But the story was later thrown into doubt. She said, quote, I'm making amends and expressing my genuine remorse as best I can when people are ready. She spun harrowing tales during her entertainment career, including that she suffered from a rare form of bone cancer, chondrosarcoma, thank you, lost a kidney and underwent an abortion. She also wrote about some of her alleged struggles in Elle and The Hollywood Reporter. Eyebrows were raised March a couple of years ago when Disney placed her on administrative leave as it launched an investigation into her claims. By the end of the month, the writer took a leave of absence from the show, Grey's Anatomy. Later that year, she admitted to never having had any form of cancer. Anybody could make that mistake. Dateline Hudson, Massachusetts, a group of World War II reenactors dressed in costume dined at a restaurant near Boston over the weekend. The actors were part of a World War II reenactment done by the American Heritage Museum. After the presentation, a group of them went to eat at the Kith and Kin restaurant nearby. Two of the actors who were wearing Nazi uniforms. The restaurant is facing backlash. The owners say they were forced to temporarily close due to threats against their workers. The trustee of the American Heritage Museum said the incident was beyond thoughtless by the actors. Quote, let's put that in context. It's at a time when anti-Semitic violence is on the rise. So wearing German uniforms in a public space, that's beyond thoughtless. That's repugnant, said the trustee from the museum. Museum itself doesn't even allow costumes with SS collars on the museum's grounds. The costumes are only supposed to be displayed on a reenactment battlefield. It does not exist off the field, which is why there are strict protocols that the American Heritage Museum has regarding what to wear, when to wear it, and how to wear it. The fallout is now affecting Kith and Kin, the restaurant, not Kath and Kim. The restaurant put up a sign saying they were forced to close for the safety of our staff, and they apologized for allowing the actors to eat in costume, saying they should have asked them to change since other diners might have not have known it was for a reenactment. They might just have thought it was Nazis. Finally, quote, I want to apologize to America. I helped create a monster. For nearly 25 years, I led marketing at NBC. I led the team that marketed The Apprentice, the reality show that made Donald Trump a household name outside of New York, where he was better known for overextending his empire and appearing in celebrity gossip columns. To sell the show, we created the narrative that Trump was a super successful businessman who lived like royalty. That was the conceit of the show. At the very least, it was a substantial exaggeration. At worst, it created a false narrative by making him seem more successful than he was. In fact, Trump declared business bankruptcy 4 times before the show went into production, and at least twice more during his 14 seasons hosting. The imposing boardroom where he famously fired contestants was a set because his real boardroom was too old and shabby for TV. Trump may have been the perfect choice to be the boss of this show, because more successful CEOs were too busy to get involved in reality TV and didn't want to hire random game show winners onto their executive teams. Trump had no such concerns. He had plenty of time for filming. He loved the attention, and it painted a positive picture of him that wasn't true. At NBC, we promoted the show relentlessly, thousands of 30-second promo spots that spread the fantasy of Trump's supposed business acumen were beamed over the airwaves to nearly every household in the country. The image of Trump that we promoted was highly exaggerated. In its own way, it was fake news that we spread over America like a heavy snowstorm. I never imagined the picture we painted of Trump as a successful businessman would help catapult him to the White House. I discovered in my interactions with him over the years that he is manipulative yet extraordinarily easy to manipulate. He has an unfillable compliment hole. No amount is too much. Flatter him and he is compliant. World leaders have discovered that too. I also found Trump remarkably thin-skinned. He aggressively goes after those who critique him and seeks retribution. I learned early on from my dealings with Trump that he thought he could simply say something over and over and eventually people would believe it. He would say to me, The Apprentice is America's number one TV show, but it wasn't, not that week, not that season. I had the ratings in front of me. He had seen and heard the ratings, but that didn't matter. He just kept saying it was the number one show on television, even after we corrected him. He repeated it on press tours, too, knowing full well it was wrong. He didn't like being fact-checked then either. While we were successful in marketing The Apprentice, we also did irreparable harm by creating the false image of Trump as a successful leader. I deeply regret that. I regret that it has taken me so long to go public. John D. Miller, former marketing head at NBC. The Apologies of the Week, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this week's edition of the show. Back next week at the same time over these same radio stations or on your audio device of choice whenever you want to hear it. It's up to you. You could buy Elon stock or you could listen to this show. Or you could do both. A tip of the show chapeau to the San Diego desk, to Pam Halstead and to Thomas Walsh at WWNO New Orleans for help with today's program. The email address for this show, your chance to get Cars I Talk t-shirts. What were those? And the playlist of the music heard here on. All at harryshearer.com, along with a lot of stuff to read and listen to and watch. It's a cornucopia, not a cornucopia. But anyway, I'm on X still at the Harry Shearer. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Changes Easy radio network. So long from New Orleans, Louisiana, the Crescent City.